I'm Paul Vanvis, the host of Curiosity Never Retires from OLLI at American University. OLLI is a national network of adult learning programs that allow mostly, but not only, retired seniors to take and teach courses on subjects that they have been interested in for years. OLLI at American University offers so many classes in so many subjects that we're doing this series of podcasts to help you decide which one you'll want to take. Today, we're going to talk to Mark Nadel, who has spent a distinguished academic career trying to answer the question his OLLI class poses this coming semester. Can't we do better than this? Thinking about improving government. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
Mark, given the current chaos in American government, I don't think you could formulate a course that would be more relevant than this one. But let's start with some historical perspective. Has the country been in this kind of turmoil before?
Well, in terms of turmoil, let's not forget the Civil War era, which is pockmarked with violence both before and after the actual Civil War. But more recently, and as a precursor and partial cause of our current problems, was the Vietnam era, very tumultuous. The reason I say that is that that was a time when trust in the federal government dropped precipitously. It never recovered. Before then, there were only a few fringe cults who believed in bizarre conspiracy theories. Many of us remember the John Birch Society and their claim that President Eisenhower was a communist agent. But in terms of thinking that the government needs fundamental change in structure and procedures, that goes pretty far back. Most notably, the decision to stand up the Hoover Commission was made in 1947 by an act of Congress. And the reason for that was the huge expansion of government, first by the New Deal, and secondly through the World War II and the enormous increase in the what was then the War Department.
Let's just give our listeners a little history lesson. The Hoover Commission was established by Congress to do what?
The Hoover Commission was established by Congress to study and make recommendations about how to better organize the federal government and how to achieve greater effectiveness and efficiency in its operations. It was chaired by former President Herbert Hoover, and an act of Congress passed it, and the act was signed by President Harry Truman.
So how much of our current troubles would you ascribe to partisan politics, and how much to the inherent difficulties of administering a government the size and complexity of the U.S.?
Well, since the Civil War, we've not had this kind of polarization. And it did not start with Donald Trump, but I would argue it started with Newt Gingrich, who became Speaker of the House of Representatives in 1995. And as a result, the U.S. Congress started acting more as a parliament, where the job of the minority party, the opposition party, was to oppose, not just to oppose a few things, but to oppose everything proposed by the administration. As a result of this polarization, it's virtually impossible to amend the Constitution if people believe that a particular fix is needed, but it requires a constitutional amendment. And the polarization also has a large impact on government operations. For example, it's been years since all 12 appropriation bills were passed on time. They used to actually be passed on time and enacted on schedule. This is the first time ever this past go-round that the Defense Department Reauthorization Act has been characterized by partisanship and delay.
Do you expect to find an answer or answers to the question your class poses by the end of the session?
Well, the course title, of course, says, Can't We Do Better? And I have my own thoughts on how we could do better. But I hope in the class we have a lot of class discussion to come up with a variety of ideas. OLLI folks I've found are smart, and there are always people in study groups who have direct experience in the things that I talk about. Well, we will certainly answer whether it's possible. I think it is, but that really depends on what solutions we're talking about and what people in general think are necessary to accomplish the improvements to the problems that they identify.
These underlying issues that involve the turmoil that we're experiencing now, these aren't new issues or new debates. Is there anything about this current period of troubles that you think distinguishes it from the past?
Well, I think there are two big differences. The first is the way Americans and most people in the world now get information. First, social media is just huge. It means that social movements and various theories can spread instantaneously. And another part of that, and equally important, is the fragmentation of the news media, partially through social media. Many of you remember the famous quote by the late Senator Patrick Moynihan, "Americans are entitled to their own opinions, but not their own facts." Well, now there actually are competing versions of the same basic reality. It was way easier to govern when everyone had the same facts on national news. Remember when Walter Cronkite in 1968 opined on the air that it looked like we were not winning the Vietnam War and were in fact losing it. No trusted authority at that time said otherwise. So distrust of government has also morphed to distrust of authority generally, for example, medical science. So this leads to acceptance of ignorance and a lack of relevant experience in high office. I mentioned the Hoover Commission, chaired by Herbert Hoover. The latest effort last year to improve government efficiency was DOGE. The Hoover Commission was chaired by an ex-president and had members of it like former Secretary of State Dean Acheson. DOGE had Elon Musk and a bunch of tech bros, none of whom had as much as one day's experience with any level of government. We have not had this kind of polarization. If you look at the data on it, you'll find that, for example, whereas 20 years ago, you on ideological measures, you would find that the parties actually overlapped a fair amount, so that the most conservative Democrats overlapped with a lot of members of the Republican Party on the moderate to liberal side. Now, on these ideological measures, we find that those two curves do not overlap at all. And this started not with President Trump, but with Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House in 1995. Gingrich brought to Congress much more of a fighting spirit among the minority. Previously, the minority party, particularly in the House of Representatives, would do their best to get into legislation those things they thought were particularly important, but they would not try to kill everything. Now it's a kill or be killed kind of mentality, so that it is very difficult to get normal business done. And this has a large impact on government operations. For example, it's been years since all 12 appropriation bills were passed on time. This is also the first time ever that the Defense Department, which by law must be reauthorized, that is, authority must be provided by Congress to fund the whole operation, it must be reauthorized annually. This is the first time that it was not done on time, and that there was partisan bickering around this defense reauthorization bill. Now, people may think, well, gosh, that's normal, and how does that really affect operations? Well, in answer also to your question about the complexity of government, Government has been big and complex for a long time, at least since the 1960s, but we still got things done. For example, when Medicare was passed in 1965, the rollout was incredibly smooth, and it really came off without a hitch. Even though it was contentious when passed because there was a fair amount of Republican opposition, but there also was Republican buy-in by a lot of members, and it was administered by private insurance companies, and there was a seamless meshing between them and the government agency that had overall responsibility for it.
Mark, you mentioned Newt Gingrich, excuse me, and the Vietnam War, and I understand the connection with all of that. To what extent, if in fact you think it does, do you think the current polarization expresses underlying, not philosophical, but underlying images of what the country should be? I mean, to what extent do you think this resolution is possible, and to what extent is it just that there are groups in this country that just have two different visions of what the United States ought to be?
Well, there's actually been a fair amount of scholarly and as well as popular literature on this very subject. There was a recent book about whether the country is pursuing competing visions of government, both descending from, in one case, Alexander Hamilton, and the other, Jefferson. Hamilton being a champion of a vigorous, energetic federal government, and Thomas Jefferson being a champion of a much more limited federal government. So that has always been present. And then there's an overlay of regional differences. One factor in it is that we have never quite come to grips, really, or certainly not solved, issues around race. The South became solid Republican, really in response to the championing by Lyndon Johnson, the Democratic president, of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And those Republicans were much more conservative than their Democratic predecessors, who still had links to the economic liberalism of the National Democratic Party.
I want to put together two things that you just talked about, the distrust in government and also the social media, because the other thing that strikes me about social media, and I'd like you to get your take on it, is that it's not just that it has provided a space for people to proliferate cults, but it has allowed people who share those opinions to get together and feel like they now have a community. Whereas once in, you know, a long time ago, there might have been a fringe group in some part of the country and another fringe group in another part, but they didn't necessarily connect. Now they feel like they're a part of something larger.
Right. It gives sort of a bizarre sense of community to fringe groups, because while the specifics of the conspiracy may differ, the idea that the government is doing something terrible and evil is one thing that animates all of them. And as I said, part of that really does, I believe, stem from the Vietnam War, when it turns out the government was doing something terrible and evil in secret.
Sounds like it's going to be a fascinating discussion, Mark. Best of luck.
Thanks, Paul.
Curiosity Never Retires is produced by myself, David Flaxman, Andrew Heller, and Jesse Williams, and is presented by Ollie at American University. Our theme music is education music by Background Music for Video at Pixabay. For Curiosity Never Retires, I'm Paul Vanvis. Stay curious.